for the Pats, and it all starts with the NFL Draft. This is where we break it all down. The Sports Hub NFL Draft Show with Bob Soucy on Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And good morning, everyone. We welcome you into our NFL Draft Preview Show, along with producer Kevin Maggiore. I'm Bob Soucy, wishing you and yours all the very best on this Easter Sunday, and of course, amid Passover, obviously under these uniquely difficult times. Hopefully you, like me, are with your loved ones. I'm very grateful for that today. And as we look forward to the next hour of NFL draft talk and preview the 2020 quarterback class, for the most part on this week's show, again, our thoughts are with everyone who can't be home today, who must be out answering the call as first responders, doing all the vital services that so often we've taken for granted in the marketplace. And then beyond that, of course, all of the brave men and women on the front lines in our medical profession. And again, speaking personally, I'm glad that my better half is here with us today after doing her part yesterday. Well, in about an hour or so, I'm going to join my family for church service, and I'm going to use the same laptop I have now displaying information in my program notes for today's show. Just walk next door from the side office into the living room. And again, I'm grateful for you to join us and happy that you're with us as we look forward to this NFL draft coming up on April 23rd, now about 2 weeks away, of course, from a virtual draft. When the Patriots are slotted to choose the 23rd player in the class of 2020, barring a trade, of course. For now, that's their lone pick in the first two rounds of a draft that will unfold amid, as we know, this uniquely uncertain period, not only in our lifetimes, but in an offseason that's unlike any of the 18 others since the Patriots capture their first Super Bowl title, led by a quarterback who'd helped them to win five more. But now the Tom Brady's company is filing for trademarks in Tampa Bay. Here in New England, we wonder if youngster Jarrett Stidham will earn Bill Belichick's stamp of approval as Brady's eventual successor, or whether someone else winds up doing so, be it Brian Hoyer, a fellow veteran yet to be acquired, or an even younger quarterback in this year's draft class. And as noted on today's show, we're going to spend a lot of time discussing some of the most attractive and intriguing players at that most important position, from a quarterback that will undoubtedly be taken in the first round, despite plenty of questions primarily related to his health and durability, to a handful of others who may not hear their names announced until day three of the draft. We'll start with former ESPN reporter Mike Rodak, who previously covered the Pats and the Bills, and now writes about the Alabama Crimson Tide and the SEC for Alabama.com. Mike will give us the latest regarding Tua Tagovailoa coming off his virtual pro day and tell us about the rest of Bama's draft-eligible players. Per usual, it's a class abundantly rich in talent. And then we'll hear from our friend Mark Schofield of USA Today's Touchdown Wire, whose exhaustive work evaluating college quarterbacks has made him a favorite guest of mine every spring on the podcast and as well as the draft show. But first, I want to get into a few thoughts from a couple of articles that I and perhaps you came across this week. One of them on footballoutsiders.com regarding the age of the Patriots roster, and the other from friend and Patriots beat reporter Andrew Callahan from the Boston Herald regarding recent drafts for the Patriots and a lack of Pro Bowlers produced through the draft for New England, going back really since 2013 when Jamie Collins was taken in the second round. But let's start with that Football Outsiders article, because there was really no major news revealed in it, but what was striking was the difference between the Patriots and other teams, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Football Outsiders uses a weighted formula based on the number of snaps played to determine the age of NFL rosters on average, and this is something that's been pointed out to any number of times by many who cover the team. I know Mike Reese has touched on it even as recently as the last couple of days. The Patriots are transitioning from 2019, when they had the oldest roster in football, into really a new era of sorts, of course, now without quarterback Tom Brady. But when Football Outsiders broke it down, the Patriots not only had the oldest roster on average, 28.6 based on weighted snaps, but significantly older than everybody else. And in fact, Philadelphia, 27.2, was next in line. But you could say, of course, the Patriots had a 42-year-old quarterback. However, it wasn't just the offense that was older than everybody else by at least a year. It was the defense, too, with an average age, again, based on weighted snaps, of 28.2. Eight players in their 30s or 40s for the Pats played 500-plus snaps in 2019. There were only 134 players 30 years or older across the league that played that many snaps. Now, as of today, without Tom Brady and even Steven Gostkowski, you look at the Patriots roster, there is still a significant portion of it, and you look at it in terms of 53 as opposed to 90 when they start training camp. Well, there are 10 players on this team, 30-plus years of age, with 8-plus years in the league, and these are guys that figure to be on a 53-man roster, or would be, if the season were to start today. So that's a significant chunk, 20% of the roster up there in years, and a number of others who are closing in on that 30-something mark, and as well a decade in the league. So that's one article to consider. And then there is what Andrew Callahan wrote about in the Boston Herald from the last six drafts. There are only two teams that have failed to pick a player who would go on to a Pro Bowl, the Pats and the Bengals. Now, you can question the criteria. The Pro Bowl is a very subjective standard to use. Of course, it is determined. Pro Bowl picks are determined in part by reputation around the league with fellow players and, of course, popularity among fans. And there are certainly several players the Patriots have drafted in the recent past who are more than worthy or have been more than worthy of Pro Bowl consideration and selection at various points since they were taken by the Pats, like Joe Tooney, for example, even Shaq Mason a couple of years ago, or a Trey Flowers before he moved on to Detroit. And it's not altogether surprising to look at both of those factors and consider that the Patriots have been on this incredible run of 11 straight years in the playoffs, four of the last six Super Bowls, taking in the late first round, and of course in 2016 and 17 being left out of the first round altogether, didn't have any first round picks in those two particular drafts. And when I look back at the last 2 years for the Pats, there is promise, certainly. 2018 and 2019 draft classes, they could prove to be outstanding lots for the Pats. But, of course, a lot of it depends on how Isaiah Wynn bounces back in season number three from an injury-plagued first 2 years in the NFL. And if Sony Michel can build on his rookie campaign and be better than he was when he rushed for over 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns combining regular season and postseason. And Juwan Bentley is a guy who can be, I think, a fixture in the Patriots linebacking core for a number of years to come. And then you take a look at that 2018 draft. Late, they picked a player like Keon Crossan, who certainly is an NFL-caliber defensive back and an outstanding special teams player. The Patriots traded him away to the Houston Texans last year. And then last year's draft class, a very large one and one that holds a lot of potential still, with the jury very much out on most of these guys. Jake Bailey, the punter, proved himself certainly last year as a rookie. And Chase Winovich, I think, showed us all flashes of his promise. We only got to see a glimpse of N'Keal Harry because of injuries. But Jawan Williams, Damian Harris, Jarrett Stidham, who we're going to find out a lot about in the next year, Yadni Kajust, Yelda Frohot, Byron Coward. Those are all players that may very well have significant roles for the Patriots, at least a handful of them, if not all of them, in the coming seasons. And then you look at the players that were taken in the two previous drafts. And that's, for me, where you get into maybe some of the issues that were addressed in the Football Outsiders piece and as well in Andrew's Boston Herald piece. Now, Joe Tooney, of course, has the franchise tag, but he's the only member of those two classes, 2016-17, who's going to play beyond the 4 years of a rookie contract. Jury's still out with Derek Rivers, of course, the top pick in the draft several years ago as a third-round player when you go back to 2017. And there were some misses early on as well in 14 and 16. Dominique Easley, excuse me, in 2014, a first-round pick, and he certainly proved to be a bust for the Pats. Malcolm Brown, 2015 first-round pick, didn't play here beyond his rookie contract. And then there was Cyrus Jones, of course, in 2016 as a second-round pick. So maybe they've gotten past those issues in large part because of the lack of first-round draft capital in 2016 and 2017, again, with Rivers being the 83rd pick overall as their top choice in 2017. But there's no question this team has to transition to a younger, faster roster. The next generation of leaders has to be developed. I look at the roster right now. There are guys who are going to be very much a part of the nucleus for this team in 2020 on the defensive line, like Lawrence Guy and John Simon, and at linebacker, Dante Hightower, in the secondary, in particular at safety with Patrick Chung and Devin McCourty, and then at cornerback Jason McCourty as well. But they're all long in the tooth by NFL standards, and the Patriots have got to move on, of course, to the next wave of leaders on that side of the ball. And same thing for offense. Last year, the Patriots' leading pass catcher as a tight end was a 38-year-old who's now retired, and their top two receivers, or at least two of the top three, are in their 30s in Julian Edelman and Mohamed Sanu. And then you look at the offensive line. Marcus Cannon is getting up there, of course, not only in age, but as well his longevity in the league. And last year, you go back, the Patriots had to pluck a player off the street like Marshall Newhouse after they had attempted to bring in Jared Valdir and Brian Schwenke, bringing him back on the offensive line before they retired. In Valdir's case, only temporarily. But this is a team, again, in transition. Let's take a look at this year's draft. We'll go to the quarterback position for the most part, but we're also going to talk about some of the intriguing prospects from Alabama and the rest of the SEC. Loaded. 10 players from the Crimson Tide went to the NFL Combine this year, 16 from LSU, and then you have so many other programs from that outstanding conference to consider as well. When we come back in the NFL Draft Preview Show, we're going to talk with Mike Rodak of Alabama.com about Tua Tagovailoa and, again, the rest of that Alabama draft class as we continue right after this on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And we welcome you back to our NFL Draft Preview Show. Welcoming in Mike Rodak from Alabama.com, AL.com, who used to cover the Patriots for ESPN.com and later went on to cover the Buffalo Bills, part of the Football Nation network of reporters for ESPN. And Mike takes time to join us this morning on Easter Sunday. Mike, thanks so much, especially on this special holiday. One, how are you doing? How are you and yours? And you're in Alabama where the stay-at-home order has been in place for just about a week now, much later than you know those of us are accustomed to here in New England. Can you give us a sense of what things are like there?
Yeah. It's and happy Easter to you as well. Thanks for having me on. It's been good down here, to be honest. I mean, it's certainly not the same situation as it is, you know, around New York City. You know, luckily, thankfully for people down here, my wife is actually a doctor, so she works at a hospital, and you know, there's always a fear of bringing something home. But I'd say for the most part, it's been, you know, life as usual for us as a family. And certainly, I think a lot of people probably share that. But yeah, I think people are taking it seriously. I know there's certainly a you know, perception that Alabama might not be, and it might be true in some parts of the state. But luckily here in Birmingham, I think people are, you know, pretty educated on what the risks are, and I think are taking it pretty seriously.
Well, because of the circumstances, Tua Tagovailoa held his pro days. I make that awkward transition now to football. Virtually, there were a handful of people on hand for his workout on Thursday, but as he went through his paces, NFL teams had to watch by way of streaming. What did they learn? What did you learn from that workout for Tua?
Well, I go back to November 17th, the day that he got injured, and sitting there in the stands in Starkville, Mississippi, and watching him get carted off. And of course, they have the cowbells in Mississippi State, and they're all ringing the cowbells for an opposing player, because I think everybody realized just how bad it looked at the time, not even be able to put weight on that leg. And, you know, you can certainly see the emotion in his face. And very few people thought that come March or April that he would be looking like he could play football. And I think that's the point where he's at right now. So I think it's all about perspective. And I know some people really nitpick the pro day video and, you know, think that maybe a lot of the throws weren't very hard. And I think there's probably some truth to that, but it's probably true to a lot of pro days. But again, you have to think back to where he was just 4 months ago and people talking about his career potentially being over. People bringing up the Bo Jackson comparison, that he was never the same after his hip injury and that dislocation and some of the, you know, the blood problems that came as part of that. But for him to be where he is right now, I think is pretty remarkable. And then again, you give a few more months and, you know, God willing, there's a football season this year and everything's fine in the country, then I think he might be really back to 100%. So I think that's the good part of it for him. And there's really two questions for him. It's A, can he get back from the hip injury? And I think he's pretty much answered that by now. And the answer is yes. B, can he kind of get over the idea that he's injury prone. And now that he's had hip injury, he had the ankle injury just a couple weeks before that. He had the ankle injury two seasons ago. He had the broken hand or the broken wrist. And can you get over the idea that there's going to be another injury? There's going to be the next time when, now that he's being paid by an NFL team, he gets hurt and that team gets hurt by that injury. So I think if you look at the hip injury in a vacuum, I don't know if NFL teams are overly concerned with that. I think their questions have been answered by the doctors. We've heard his agents come out and his doctors come out and independent doctors come out and say that he's fine. But there's still that element of risk where a team taking him is going to think, when is the next injury coming and what is that going to mean for us?
And Mike, there are also questions for some I know who evaluate quarterbacks about the size of Tua, but he's come up big in the biggest of moments. And here's a player who worked under three different offensive coordinators, including Brian Daboll, former Patriots assistant. He's been a quarterback in a national championship coming off the bench to rally his team to victory. On third and fourth downs, the numbers are spectacular. He makes plays. When you look at him, having seen him firsthand and having followed his career, where do you project, if he's healthy, if all the questions about the medicals are answered, where does Tua land in the NFL in terms of being a franchise quarterback, at least a starter, or someone who doesn't really establish himself as an every-week quarterback in the NFL?
I think he has all the potential to be a franchise quarterback. I think he has, number one, the accuracy. And you mentioned Brian Daboll. I, of course, covered him in Buffalo for 1 year, and he would tell me stories about Tua. When I told him I was going down to Alabama, and he would say, you know, they put a soda can up on the goalpost and have him throw at it, and he would nail it. Or Daboll would kind of go out, split wide left or wide right to him and kind of get, you know, 180 degrees and throw up some fingers and ask Tua what number he was putting up. And Tua's vision was so good that he could see all the way out there and get that right. And that's what really impressed, you know, Brian Daboll when he was down there. And honestly, Tua probably got better, you know, in the two seasons after Daboll left Alabama to come up to Buffalo. So, I mean, he certainly has the makeup from a football standpoint to be a franchise quarterback, and the height thing is going to be there. I mean, it's always the debate, and we've seen, you know, Drew Brees and Russell Wilson and some of these smaller quarterbacks succeed. So I don't know if that is, you know, the end all be all. We've seen a lot of tall quarterbacks have issues in the NFL as well. So you need more than just size. And I think Tua has those qualities, and just from covering him up close, I mean, again, I've covered 10 seasons now of football, whether it's been Patriots, Bills, or now Alabama. And I think Tua is one of the top 5 or 10 guys that I've covered just in terms of personality and, you know, just pleasant to be around. And I think that certainly translates well to being a quarterback and having to lead a locker room. And I think he had the respect of that locker room in Alabama. I think he definitely had the respect of Nick Saban. I mean, Nick Saban is not one to just heap praise on people. We know that. But he did so with Tua, and he even said that Tua was one of the few players over his years that he really, you know, got to know as a person and really got to enjoy being around as a person. I think that speaks volumes as well.
Some, too, would point to the talent around him. Obviously, it was a loaded roster once again this past year, particularly at the wide receiver spot and on the offensive line, and I want to get to some of those players as we continue. And I'll start with the two wide receivers that are likely to go, if not sure to go in the first round. Jerry Jeudy, probably the first or second rated wide receiver, depending on whose draft board it is, and Henry Ruggs with 4.27 speed in the 40. 40 catches last year, not a lot of production in that regard, but nearly 19 yards per reception. A lot of people look at him as a speedster along the lines, Justin Jefferson, I guess, LSU, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb out of Oklahoma, the top four receivers in this year's draft. How do you characterize Jeudy and Ruggs? What are their strengths? What are the concerns?
Yeah, you mentioned Ruggs and the speed. I mean, that obviously kind of jumps off the page. And my one concern with him would just be, does he have more than that? Because I covered a couple guys in Buffalo who Patriots fans might remember, T.J. Graham, and then Marquise Goodwin, Goodwin being an Olympic sprinter. And both of those, I think Goodwin still has a top five 40 time for the NFL Combine. And it's never really translated to the NFL. I mean, Goodwin had a lot of injury issues, and Graham, I think, did as well, from what I remember. But it just never really worked for them. So, you definitely need more than speed. Does Ruggs have it? I think so. I think he's probably a better player than those. But if teams can figure out a way to chip him off the line and kind of negate that deep ball game that he might have, can he find another way to win as a receiver? That's the biggest question for him. I mean, I thought he kind of fell off a little bit last year after it was the Ole Miss game. So I think it was the fifth game of the year for them. He tweaked his hip a little bit. I think it was a hip contusion. And then just never really was the same after that, at least in my eyes, looking at him from the press box. I think he had a great month of September last year. But then October, November, he sort of faded. So it's just, can he hold up, A, durability-wise? Can he really find a different way if he's not being a deep threat, a vertical guy? Can he find a different way to be an NFL receiver? For Judy, it's a little bit different. I don't know if he really has a overwhelming, characteristic or trait to him, like Ruggs does with his speed. I think some people point to Judy's route running, and certainly that's very good. He's probably more of a complete all-around receiver. And, I mean, going into last year, he was the Blitnikoff Award winner the year before. I think there was a lot of expectations for him. I don't know if he completely met those last year. And some of the same things as Ruggs. There's just points in the year where I thought he faded a little bit and wasn't quite the guy who I was expecting coming in. So I do think there's questions with both. I don't know if both are slam dunk number one wide receivers in the NFL that, you're spending a top 15 pick on them and you're not looking back. There's definitely an element of risk with both of them, but at the end of the day, I think they're both going to be very good receivers.
Mike, the offensive lineman from Alabama at tackle, Jedrick Willis, he figures to be long gone by the time the Patriots pick. Maybe the number one tackle in this year's draft class. There's another player I want to ask you about, though, Matt Womack, 6'7", 325, perhaps a late-round pick, possibly a priority free agent. You know the Patriots well. How does he fit in the plans of an NFL team as a guy coming out of college?
Sorry to cut you off. Yeah, he's an interesting guy because he didn't play last year. And I wasn't here for spring camp or fall camp last year in Alabama. I got the job Labor Day weekend, basically right after their first game, about a month after I moved down here. And so I never really watched him in practice. I did watch him a little bit last season when he started, and then apparently he lost the competition to start this past summer. But those are the players that the Patriots do seem to find, and they sort of mine them from deeper parts of college football, which this is. I mean, you're on the second team and you don't play, that's the sort of player that is probably not going to be on a lot of teams' radar. I mean, he wasn't invited to the combine. He played at the East-West Shrine game, but he did not go to the Senior Bowl. So not someone who I would expect to be taken in the first four or five, maybe even six rounds. But, the seventh round, priority free agent, does have the tackle and guard versatility that I think the Patriots would like. And obviously, if Nick Saban gives Bill Belichick a good recommendation on him, which I don't know if he will or not. I mean, again, he lost his job this year. Then certainly I could see that being something that happens.
On the other side of the line of scrimmage, defensive lineman Raekwon Davis, edge rushers Terrell Lewis, Anthony Jennings, maybe more of an every down lineman than an edge guy. But you look at that front for Alabama, how much do you like those guys?
Yeah, I think potential is the big word with at least two of them, and Raekwon and Terrell Lewis. I mean, those guys are physically what you want at those positions. Raekwon is 6'7", 300-plus pounds. He's exactly what a 3-4 defensive end would look like in the NFL. And Terrell Lewis is really built in the mold of a 3-4 outside linebacker. 6'5", he can probably be 260 if he wants. Long arms, athletic. Anthony Jennings, to me, always struck me as being a little bit of the underdog in terms of his size. And I don't have his exact measurements on top of my head, but he always looked like he was a little bit smaller out there. And he was maybe a little bit more scrappy, which, hey, that could be something the Patriots could want too. And certainly a player that Alabama leaned on a lot last year. He was a redshirt senior. They lost both of their inside linebackers and their 3-4 the torn ACLs right before the season. So they were really looking for somebody to step up as a leader on their defense, and I think Anfernee did that more than anybody else. But in terms of potential, I mean, Terrell Lewis, if he can stay healthy, he missed all of the 2018 season with an ACL and most of the 2017 season with an elbow injury. So this was really his first full year back in 3 years, and he had his ups and downs. I don't know if he was a dominant pass rusher the entire year. He had a couple good games here and there, but if he can put it all together, then he can certainly be what a first-round pass rusher should look like. Raekwon, I think, you know, there's going to be some character questions there. Self-admitted on his part, even that he, you know, he has to answer questions about just his motivation to play football and his focus. He's brought that up himself, which is a good thing, but, you know, certainly you hear a lot about it around here. Just a player who, you know, really needs to bear down and make football important to him. He did have an off-field incident a couple years ago where he actually got shot in the leg. It was random, but just one of those things that I think will make teams really dig into him. And then from the football standpoint, there's a lot of questions about him, whether he's a three-down player. I don't know if he is. And he never really was a pass-rushing force last year for them or even the year before. I think you have to go back to his sophomore year to when he was actually doing something in the pass rush. And that was disappointing for Alabama because he looked like he was a really promising player. Even on his part, he looked like he was going to come out in the draft a year early, be a first-round pick, be a top-10 pick, which is where he was projected, and then just never really worked out. He had to stay in school another year. Maybe a second-round pick right now, maybe a third-round pick. So if they're looking for a two-down player who can just kind of hold the line of scrimmage, he can probably do that. But I don't know if I'd pick him much earlier than the second round.
Mike, one other player I want to ask you about who some have associated in their mock drafts with the Patriots, and I'm going to presume that there are no such questions about his motivation, Xavier McKinney. Played free safety for the Crimson Tide. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, he definitely seems like a Patriot to me, just having covered him. He seems like the smart, intelligent sort of player who they would want back there. Versatile as well. That's really the number one quality to me that stands out is, you know, he would start at safety in their base defense, but then once they went down to a nickel or dime, a sub package, he would actually go down and play closer to the line of scrimmage, cover a lot of tight ends. Play in the slot a little bit. So that's what they want out of their safeties for the most part. And I could certainly see that being a good fit if he is there on the board at 24. Am I correct with the Patriots?
23.
Where they're picking? 23, yeah. I'm sorry. I could see him being there. You know, there's been some Twitter debates I've seen over the last couple of days on who the best safety is in the draft. And I think, you know, McKinney certainly has a good claim to that. And again, I could see him being a Patriot. Would he start right away? Probably not, but I could see him potentially being a replacement down the road for Patrick Chung or somebody like that, you know, maybe playing that Daron Harmon role now that Harmon is gone. And I think it would be good value with that pick. That would certainly make sense. And he's a good player.
And Mike, before I let you go, given the uncertainty of these times, particularly for football teams, not only in the NFL, of course, with no OTAs and no offseason conditioning, and likely no OTAs right now, no offseason conditionings, and college teams, of course, scattered now off campus and with no spring ball. Give us a sense. What's it like on the Alabama campus right now? How are the coaches, how are players who will be in next year's draft class dealing with the uncertainty of the present?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because there's a couple guys who decided to come back who I think surprised a lot of people, being Devontae Smith, who was really their best receiver last year statistically, maybe a little bit undersized. I don't know if he's really going to fix that as a senior, but he surprised a lot of people by deciding to come back. Najee Harris was their running back, I think, at 12, 15 touchdowns, something like that, over the SEC schedule in the last couple months of the year. Had a great year in my mind. And then Dylan Moses, a little bit more understandable. He tore his ACL at the beginning of last year, missed the entire season, but was still projected as a second-round pick. So there's three guys you'd think are probably – I don't want to speak for them, but you'd certainly think there's probably some level of regret that now they could have entered the NFL draft, they could have had more security, and now they're entering a pretty big period of uncertainty where people don't even know if the college football season will be played. And now you're talking kind of pushing their, you know, their schedule down the road a little bit. So, you know, that's the feeling for those guys. And for Nick Saban, I mean, he's still in his office. He did an Instagram live with SportsCenter the other day, and you could see right behind him, he's still in his office. But there's really nobody else there. And so they're doing a lot of, like everybody else is doing, you know, Zoom calls with coaches, and recruiting is a big part of it too. And that's, you know, NFL teams only have to deal with one end of it right now, but Nick Saban still has to be talking to recruits. And this is typically a time of year where there'd be visits and, you know, Saban would be flying around the country and recruiting a lot of these guys. Well, he can't do that right now. And as you might imagine, that certainly has him upset. But that's just the reality of it. And I mean, look, Alabama's 2021 recruiting class, the one that they're working on right now, only has one committed player right now. And the rest of the SEC is far and away, you know, ahead of them in terms of number of commits. So they have some ground to make up. I think some timing here hit them pretty hard. And again, we'll have to see if there's a season played. But certainly it's an interesting time in a part of the world, a part of the country where college football is number one by far.
Well, Mike, as someone who's married as well to a medical professional, I've often said somewhat tongue in cheek over the years that I'm in fun and games and she's in life and death, and given your situation as well. Thanks so much for your time talking football today. Our thoughts with you and your wife. Thanks as well to her for what she's doing. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. And again, happy Easter to all of you.
Mike Rodak from AL.com. Our guest will be back with Mark Schofield to talk more quarterbacks in this year's draft class right after this. Welcome back to our NFL Draft Preview Show on this Easter Sunday. And time now to bring in our friend Mark Schofield, who now works for USA Today's Touchdown Wire, among other outlets and services, evaluating prospects, and in particular, exercising his specialty and looking at quarterbacks. Mark, how are you this morning? Happy Easter to you and yours, and we thank you for your time today.
Oh, Bob, great to be with you. Happy Easter to you and yours as well. Hope everybody's doing well this Easter morning, and it's great to be back with you, my friend.
I want to talk about the quarterbacks who I think might be most attractive to the Patriots, but let's quickly cover a few guys who aren't going to be available to them unless they somehow spring forward with a massive deal to move up from 23 in position to take one of the guys, Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert. Of those three, is Burrow the one sure thing, can't miss prospect? What do you make of the other two? And are the Dolphins legitimately, is there reason for the Dolphins? I'm not going to ask you if they're intrigued, but you know, we've been reading lately rumors and speculation that Miami might like Herbert better than Tua. Why would they in his case?
Right, and I do think that of those three, Joe Burrow is the cleanest prospect to evaluate. He's pretty much the all-around type quarterback that teams fall in love with. You look at the way he's able to do some of the little things at the quarterback position, like move defenders with his eyes, move defenders with subtle shoulder pumps or pump fakes, the accuracy to all levels, the pocket toughness, the pocket awareness, the competitive toughness. He checks so many boxes at the quarterback position, and it was just a joy to watch and study him this year. I think of the next two, a lot of it will come down to the medical piece with Tua Tagovailoa. I mean, the hip injury is a critical injury that teams are wary of. And I know from talking to some teams and some organizations, both down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl and then out in Indianapolis for the Combine, teams are worried. Teams are worried about that hip. And we're hearing, you know, Mike Lombardi, obviously a former general manager himself, has said that some teams have failed him from a physical standpoint. Now, we don't know if that's entirely true. This is that time on the calendar where teams start to put things out in the media to perhaps, you know, maybe if Tua happens to fall a little bit, they'll benefit. So, you know, but the medical part is huge with them. I think that would be the reason where a team would have Herbert instead of Tua on their board, because as far as on the field goes, I think Tua is also a very clean, easy evaluation. Quick snap release, ran a sort of modern West Coast type of offense that will translate well to the National Football League. He is very athletic. He can move well. He can extend plays outside of the pocket. And when you look at Herbert, yes, you have the big arm, the big size, and the athleticism, but his entire body of work at Oregon was just good. You never really saw him become great while he was out in Oregon. And I think there are examples of him doing the things you want to see on film. He had a very good week down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl, But if all things are equal and the hip checks out, for me, it's Tua over Herbert.
Mark, there are two quarterbacks who certainly look good at an airport. Guys with a physical stature, Jordan Love, 6'3", 224. The measurables are there out of Utah State. But disappointing production, a lot of interceptions as a senior in that offense. And then there's Jacob Eason, who didn't win the job at Georgia, wound up in Washington, another big kid, 6'5", 231. But with each of those quarterbacks, there are some questions about makeup and maybe an absence of some of the intangibles NFL teams are looking for. To get Love, you have to take him at 23 if you're the Patriots. I've seen him mock to the Pats. I'm somewhat of a naysayer there. I'm a little cynical about that. I don't see him as a guy because of those questions who might fit their profile. How do you see him and how do you see Eason?
I mean, I think you're exactly right to describe them the way you did. They're guys that look great on the sideline. They look great in warmups. They're the guys that when they go to the Indianapolis for the combine and they're thrown in the T-shirt and the shorts, they look the part. But I think you're exactly right, in particular about Love. When you look at the Patriots profile, and I don't know if people saw this, but Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network, former NFL scout who spent some time with Belichick, posted his old notes from back in 1991, Belichick's sort of scouting profile for the offensive positions. And when it comes to quarterback, it says number one is to make good decisions, then the arm, then the size, then physical toughness and leadership. But first is that decision-making process. And with Love, 17 interceptions last year. Now, he said all the right things about them down in Mobile and out in Indianapolis for the combine. They were learning moments, teaching lessons, things like that. But those are 17 mistakes. And if you look back at his 2018 tape, while he didn't have 17 interceptions, he easily could have. And there are serious question marks about his decision-making in the pocket, and that's the one thing that Bill Belichick wants in a quarterback, is to make good decisions. And so I'm with you, Bob. Even if he's there at 23, I would be stunned if the Patriots draft him. I think he's the kind of quarterback that they're going to look at and say, we just don't trust him to make good decisions with a football. With Eason, you know, there's a bit more of a situation where you could say if he's there at 23, they think about it. You know, but I think he's more of a trade-down candidate if they move back into the second round. I think the physical tools are there. I think he's a bit better in terms of reading the field than Love was last season. I think he sort of fits their profile. When you watch him in Washington's offense, there's a lot of those play-action plays with a deep drop where he's working under center, turns the back to the defense, then has to snap the eyes around to read the middle of the field. That's more pro style. That's more in line with what the Patriots want to do offensively. But I think at 23, it's probably still a bit of a reach. I think if they do decide to trade out of 23 and get more picks on day two, they might consider him then.
Mark, what about day two, day three quarterbacks? And there's two in particular I definitely want to get to. One is Jake Fromm from Georgia. He has traits the Patriots, I think, admire. Durability, 42 consecutive starts, maturity, played high leverage games in a high profile offense, recruited by Mark Richt, played for Kirby Smart, two coaches that Bill Belichick seems to have a lot of trust in, beat out Jacob Eason and Justin Fields, the Ohio State quarterback for the Georgia job, so he's been able to compete and more than acquit himself, win the job. And then the other guy is James Morgan, who really has been introduced to us by Mike Reese in particular over the last couple of weeks out of Florida International, started at Bowling Green, recruited by Dino Babers, really bright young man. And I thought watching some of the tape on him against Miami in particular last year, he looked like he might belong on an NFL field.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're getting into sort of day two, day three, these are the two guys you want to keep in mind. You might want to throw Jalen Hurts from Oklahoma in there as well. We can start with Jake Fromm. And I think for all the reasons I just sort of listed about what Bill Belichick values at the quarterback position, Jake Fromm has to be somebody you're keeping in mind because, you know, he makes good decisions with the football. When you look at what he was asked to do at Georgia, he comes in as a freshman and he's making checks and decisions and calls at the line of scrimmage. I think he took a lot on from a mental perspective in that Georgia offense. That's what the Patriots value at the position. Is he the most physically impressive quarterback in this class? No. You know, when you saw what he did at the combine, the athletic testing wasn't great. You know, what he did during his throwing session wasn't great. But the stuff that matters is the stuff we don't get to see, Bob. And that's when he walks into a hotel suite, when he gets in front of a general manager and an offensive coordinator and a head coach and walks to the whiteboard and draws things up and says, this is what I was asked to do. These are the reads I was asked to make. These are the calls I was asked to make. That's the stuff that matters at the quarterback position that the Patriots value very much, and I think he crushed that part of the process. The one concern I would have with him, and I know it sounds silly, but the hand size is something to keep in mind. He comes in with sub-9-inch hands. That matters in weather. That matters in the elements. You might want to wonder about how is that going to hold up, say, in a December, you know, snowy or rainy night in Foxborough. When you watch him play against Kentucky in that monsoon game, he couldn't throw the ball. That is something I think they will look at and consider when they think about Jake Fromm. As for Morgan, a lot of traits that you like. He has the good arm. He has the mobility. When you see him run that offense, you're seeing him make completions in the middle of the field, that intermediate range where we know the Patriots love to throw the football, in that 10 to 19-yard range downfield. Completed 44 of 78 passes for a passer rating of 107.7, four touchdowns, no interceptions. Very clean in the area the Patriots love to attack. If you get into, say, sometime on day three with those six-round picks they have, they haven't addressed quarterback yet, he's probably somebody you're going to see them turn a card in with his name on it.
Kid who grew up about a mile or so from Lambeau Field, he's one of those rare Wisconsin quarterbacks who's excelled on the next level. Another quarterback from that state is Nate Stanley. Now, I don't see him as a guy that any team would take as a projected starter, but he may be in the Danny Etling type of mold for the Patriots, guy with a lot of the intangibles and great makeup coming out of a program they have a lot of respect for, having played under Kirk Ferentz and Brian Ferentz's offense. Stanley, a real leader, again, a guy with a lot of durability. Numbers somewhat inconsistent, Mark, but 3-0 in bowl games. What do you make of him as potentially a sixth or seventh round pick or even a priority free agent?
Yeah, I think he's somebody that's probably, you know, on that day three radar for New England. I think you look at the offense that he ran, a lot of NFL type of concepts, a lot of layered concepts to one side of the field. A lot of those, again, like we talked about with Jacob Eason, those play action plays with a back to the defense working under center. The other thing to keep in mind with Nate Stanley, he's got an incredible arm. You know, he didn't show it, I think, enough at Iowa, but showed a little bit more at the combine, has the ability to make those NFL throws, those deep out routes from one hash mark to the opposite sideline. He's working with Tony Rokopi, a noted quarterback coach, on, I talked to Nate Stanley about this at the combine, on keeping his throwing motion tighter, more into the body. He's getting a little bit more refined with his passing mechanics. Now, I think he's the type of player that, like you said, you would look at as, you know, a depth option at the position later in the draft, sometime on day three. You know, somebody that they could bring in would sort of compete for the backup job, perhaps Brian Hoyer, and give them some versatility, some depth, and another option behind Jarrett Stidham for next season. I like Nate Stanley. I think the Patriots will like Stanley. I think he has a lot of the things that they do like at the position. He might be worried about the lack of a 60% completion percentage in college, but he has some of the raw tools and traits that they like at the quarterback spot.
Mark, this time last year, we talked a lot about Jarrett Stidham, a guy that you spent time with in Mobile at the Senior Bowl, and you were very high on him. You were one of the first people that I recall among the draft evaluators who really touted Stidham coming out of Auburn after his senior year. If he were in this year's draft class, and you can include Joe Burrow and Herbert and Tua, where would Jarrett Stidham rank? And we've got to take into account, of course, he's had a year of development in the NFL.
Right. I mean, I think if he were in this year's draft class coming out of Auburn, I would have him at sort of that back of that second tier. I mean, the way I tier this group, you have Burrow and Tua in that top tier alone. Then you have, you know, Justin Herbert, Jordan Love, Jacob Eason, Jalen Hurts, Jake Fromm. And I would put Jarrett Stidham in that mix. That's how I felt about him coming out. I think what, you know, when you look at Jarrett Stidham's body of work in college, he was in two offenses that I think didn't do him the most favors in terms of evaluating him. He was in a Baylor system that was a boundary and vertical offense. He was in that Auburn offense that was an option-based attack. I really got a good sense of who he was as a prospect at last year's Senior Bowl because he was in Kyle Shanahan's offense and ran it extremely well. And when I talked to him about that offense, he just told me that he loved doing everything he was asked that week, and you could see it, the decision-making, the accuracy, the ability to make throws to all levels, the ability to make quick reads and progression reads, things he wasn't asked to do in college. And that's why I thought he would be a good fit in New England's offense. And I, you know, think that in this draft class, he would be at the back of that second tier in the sort of that, you know, day two, late day two range. You know, he slid to the Patriots last year in the fourth round. You know, the Patriots were, I think, lucky to get him where they did. And the fact that they've made the moves or haven't, you know, made or perhaps haven't made moves at the quarterback position other than Brian Hoyer tells us how the team feels about this kid going forward.
Mark, lastly, is there anybody that I left out? You mentioned Jalen Hurts. Anybody that I left out worth noting from your point of view? Again, as a potential Patriot, maybe not on day one, but perhaps day two or three.
Yeah, I think if we're going to talk about two more quarterbacks that I would want people to keep in mind as we get sort of into that day three range, one is Anthony Gordon from Washington State. Obviously an air raid-based quarterback playing for Mike Leach, but has an incredibly quick release. He was a baseball player, a middle infielder when he was growing up. He told us at the combine that he has that ability, given that background, to make some of those quick snap throws from different arm slots and arm angles. Needs to fix the footwork a bit more statuesque with his feet than perhaps Gardner Minshew, his predecessor at Washington State. But I think he's got that sort of ability to make off-platform throws and progression reads in that air raid offense that the Patriots would like, you know, to see from a prospect coming out of college. And the other is Cole McDonald from Hawaii, who's a run-and-shoot quarterback. It's not an offense you typically see guys translate out of into the National Football League, but he has the arm to make any throw asked of him. And in that air raid, in that run-and-shoot offense, he's asked to, you know, read a lot of route conversions, which will help him transition to an NFL playbook. And he has the mentality that you want from a quarterback. I asked him about a play he had in his bowl game where it was a 31 closing minutes, you know, trying to lead a comeback drive. He has a wide open, shallow crossing route just past the first down marker, an easy throw, you know, to stop the clock, you know, reset, huddle, and things like that. But instead, he looks at that, doesn't throw it, throws a deep route along the left sideline in between the corner and the safety for a huge play and a first down. And when I asked him about it, I'm like, look, you had the easy throw. Why didn't you take it? He said, look, if you're going to give me that deep shot, I don't care if it's third and one, fourth and long, first quarter, I'm going to throw it. I don't care. I don't care what the situation is. And you love hearing that from a quarterback, that willingness to challenge windows downfield, that aggressive nature. I think Bill Belichick would like hearing that too. So those are the other two guys, Anthony Gordon and Cole McDonald, to keep in mind on day three.
Gordon, drafted out of high school by the New York Mets, passed up that pro baseball opportunity to play college football. And we of course, know that the Patriots' last quarterback as well turned down an opportunity to play professional baseball to focus on college quarterbacking. Hey, Mark, I appreciate your time and insights, as always. Mark Schofield from Touchdown Wire on USA Today, and as well, Mike Rodak, our guest from AL.com today. Mark, listen, thanks so much. Happy Easter. Stay safe and sound. I know you're in the D.C. area, of course, an area that has been characterized as the next hotspot in what we're dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic. Please take care, and again, all the best to you and yours.
All the best to you and yours as well, Bob. Great to be with you. Be well.
All right, thanks so much. And as I mentioned, Mark and Mike, my special thanks again to both, as well as our producer, Kevin Maggiore. And my thanks to you as well for joining us with this morning respite of football talk, of course, on Easter Sunday, mid-Passover, and as we are continuing our social distancing and abiding by the stay-at-home way of life now for all of us, or at least most of us. Again, please take care of yourselves and your loved ones. We will talk to you again next week with another edition of our NFL Draft Preview. We'll get into some of the other areas, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, where the Patriots might be apt to look in this year's draft. But again, a lot of quarterback talk today. And speaking of quarterbacks, it's Christian Arkan who will run the show coming up at the top of the hour. He's going to take over. Before I turn it over to him, we're going to pause for a timeout. Few commercial words. Christian comes back and takes you through the next part of our programming day here at 98.5 The Sports Hub. But as I bid adieu again, thanks so much to our guests and producer Kevin, and as well thanks to you. All the best, everyone. Take care. I'm Bob Soucy. So long for now.